Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by the Farmington Civic Center, bringing a wide variety of live entertainment to the Four Corners. Country music, classic rock, and ballet, all on stage this fall. Also, on-stage theatrical performances of The Rocky Horror Show and the holiday classic A Christmas Carol. Find out more online at fmtn.org/shows.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Cullop, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning, Megan Cullop. It is Friday morning, and here we are
talking about
COVID-19.
It's pretty bad out there.
It's still with us, and in a bad way. Yeah.
Fiercely with us.
Exactly.
It's like a jilted ex-lover.
Can't get the message to go away.
Exactly.
Just go away.
See?
I wish I could ghost you, COVID.
Yeah.
Yes. See? Anyway, we're glad that you are with us, everybody, because we do have a great program for you to share local information about COVID-19 here in San Juan County. Three guests on the program this morning, two from the hospital. Eddie Carrero, you see on the screen, he is the Vice President of Human Resources at San Juan Regional Medical Center, and he'll be joining us along with Dr. Robert Underwood, the Chief Medical Officer from San Juan Regional Medical Center, and then also our friend from the Department of Health.
Matt Bieber.
Yeah, he'll be calling in as well. So stand by for all of that, everyone, but we'll start with a little bit of just the overview of where things stand here in San Juan County, because unfortunately, we're still leading the state in the number of new cases every day on an almost daily basis. I've been trying to monitor, and I think more days than not, San Juan County has the most cases of any county in New Mexico, and that includes like Bernalillo and Doña Ana and Santa Fe, those counties that have more people in them, but we're still having more cases.
Yeah.
So does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. And as you can see,
calculating over here.
There you go. On the graph on the screen, everybody, I just did a few calculations as well, but the seven-day average appears to be kind of going down, but they're still high. On November 9th, it was 190 cases, the seven-day average. On November 11th, it was 170. And on November 12th, it was 143. So that's kind of where things are on the state, and that's coming from the state dashboard, the COVID dashboard, still being updated. And then the other thing I wanted to point out was, again, these averages, right? We used to watch the red, green, blue, turquoise map, red, green, yellow, blue, turquoise map.
Red, green, yeah.
Yeah. So you remember that?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So we're all in red, surprise, surprise, the whole state. But the positivity rate is 22.86%, according to the state. And last week, the cases per 100,000 was 104.5, and we said how bad that was.
Right.
And this week?
153.8.
Yeah. Even worse.
Even worse.
So there you go. Anyway, with that being said, let's go to our guests.
Yeah.
Shall we?
That cheery setup. Let's hear from the hospital.
Let's do that right now on the phones, calling in. We appreciate them being with us again. Dr. Bob Underwood is on the phone this morning, and also Eddie Carrero is on the phone as well. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for calling in, both of you. And I guess, Dr. Underwood, could we start with you about the current situation at San Juan Regional Medical Center?
Sure. So, kind of just following along with the state level, of course, things are very, very busy here at the hospital. We have 95 patients, actually 93, that are already positive for COVID. And then we have three that we're waiting for the test results to come back. So indeed quite busy. Our regular ICU is completely full. Our step-down ICU, which is kind of an intermediate care, has already been converted to an ICU, and it is also full. And then we have a number of ICU-level patients, in other words, it's the care that they need, up on actually two of the floors right now. So quite busy. And we're also have more, of course, coming in every day. So it's a big turnover, as you would imagine. We have, with the crisis standards of care, that's kind of what gives us the opportunity, if you will, to convert quite a number of beds into ICU level of care so that we can care for the patients that do come in. So busy emergency department as well. Right now we have five patients that require admission that are still in the emergency department waiting for beds. So as you alluded to at the beginning, we're very busy doing what we can for our community. You know, one of the big problems is everybody in the state, you were talking about state numbers just a moment ago, and everybody in the state is pretty much as busy as we are. And so normally when we would get this busy, we would transfer to other parts of the state that had open beds. The problem is nobody really has open beds. So there is nowhere to really send people.
So is it conceivable, Bob, that we're going to see some field hospitals set up? I mean, that was kind of something that was talked about in the beginning.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that. We will continue to convert other parts of our hospital as we need to. We can expand, for example, into the post-anesthesia and post-surgical care areas if we need to, but we have not done that. Those are other options, and we would try as best we could to really just convert what our physical plant is, and we're not going to have tents set up outside or anything like that, from what we can tell right now.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Underwood. And Eddie Carrera, welcome to the program. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the situation with staffing, and I imagine that just exacerbates what Dr. Underwood is talking about with high levels of patients and staff levels maybe not at a level that you would like to have them. You've got openings in multiple departments, don't you?
Yes, thank you. It's definitely, on one hand, been very helpful that we've had help from the state and the Federal Department of Health in providing us temporary staff relief. That being said, we still have a number of positions open and really just looking for those in the community that either have recently retired from healthcare as a profession or maybe they're working in a different capacity and they have the availability to take on some extra shifts and help out their friends, families, and neighbors, some of which are here with us at the hospital. And so we do have openings for nurses, nursing assistants, radiology technicians and physical therapists, speech language pathologists, several positions, EMTs. We've had several from local fire departments that have offered to take extra shifts, and these are all paid shifts. Respiratory therapists, and a lot of times people don't think about it, but environmental service aides, you know, housekeepers, janitors, we need their help as well, in addition to anyone who would like to volunteer. We can find a place for everyone in the community to participate, but we're all in this together and just reaching out to see if we can get some extra help from the community over the holidays.
Very good. And so that's an interesting point on volunteering is when we talk about community members who are able to volunteer. I mean, I know that there's like a medical reserves, things like that. But if we're talking about unskilled people, where are those folks going to go?
Well, through our volunteer services department and our hospital auxiliary, they have several projects, some of which are non-patient facing, but you know, everything from assembling baskets to care cards to just really supporting our caregivers. And so we welcome them and appreciate any help that volunteers can provide as well.
Understood. And Mr. Kerr, how quick is the onboarding process? I imagine it depends on position to position, but how quickly can you get some of these folks back on board, would you say?
Very quickly. We have a fast track for those that are taking on some of these temporary positions, and it's easy to apply. They can either come in or they can call the main number, and we'll take down their information and actively reach out to them on you know, their interest and the hours that they're available. And if you'd like, I can provide that number and that information.
Very good. And Eddie, you know, this might be a subject that you don't want to speak on, but what is the deal with these exemptions that we hear about? How has that been going for you guys?
So several, are you referencing a vaccine exemption?
Yes, given the mandate, yeah.
Okay. Well, the vast majority of our caregivers and those coming to us have made the decision to become vaccinated, and that is the safest and the most encouraged option. But for those that have deeply held religious belief, the state and the law does provide for them to apply for an exemption, and we will review the exemption and approve it if it meets the requirements. There's also a medical exemption and disability exemption. So there are some circumstances where some are not able to receive the vaccine, and we respect and honor that.
Got it. Thank you very much. You mentioned, Mr. Carrero, talking about the phone number that folks can call to maybe apply or get more information about the openings that you have at the hospital. Why don't you share that with our audiences, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. They can reach out to the main phone number at 505-609-2000, and they can also stop by the Centers for Workforce Excellence. That's the HR offices, and that's located on 800 West Maple. We're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Very good. Thank you very much. And Dr. Underwood, before we let you go, I wanted to just touch base with you again about, I think we mentioned this last week or so, about the crisis standards of care and the important distinction that no patients are being turned away from the hospital. I always like you to kind of revisit that, if you don't mind, and just explain what that means. Even though the hospital is in this crisis standards of care, you are still caring for COVID and non-COVID patients who arrive at the hospital seeking care, correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. You know, our emergency department is always open. We're still doing surgery for those that have medically necessary procedures that need to be done. So we are always open, you know, for heart attacks and all of the other emergency care that we would normally be providing. So that is always ongoing. And speaking of which, there's a helicopter landing outside my window right now to show that we're still bringing patients in when they need care.
Thank you very much. And I did want to remind all of our audiences again that all the numbers that we gave at the beginning of the program about the numbers of cases and the positivity rates and things along that, I mean, those equal human beings. Sometimes we forget that, I think. And your folks, yeah. Dr. Underwood and Mr. Carrero, see that day in and day out at the hospital. And you were telling us about some of these numbers that you are seeing. And I just don't think we can lose track of that and lose sight of that these numbers represent human lives and human beings, and then they're connected to families and folks that care about them. And we need to keep that in our thoughts and prayers as well.
That is absolutely true, Scott. And thanks for pointing that out. It does. It impacts families. It impacts the people that have to care for them. And it's impacted our organization as well. We've had some of our own caregivers that have had to be admitted, and some have not done well. And so, yes, those are all very, very personal, deep impacts for the families and for the people that are around them. You know, I still want to point out also, if I may, Scott, that of the patients, if we look at the month of October, just the month of October, that 81% of our patients are unvaccinated, compared to only 27% out in the public here in San Juan County are unvaccinated. So 27% of the patients out there, or 27% of our population, is making up 81% of our COVID patients. In the month of October, we had 17 patients die in our hospital from COVID. Only one of them was vaccinated. All the rest had not received a vaccine. So I cannot reiterate enough, please get the vaccine. And yes, it is a personal decision, but it is a personal decision that affects other people, because there are people who are unvaccinated here that are kind of putting us in crisis standards of care. And that's affecting other people from being able to get into those beds, like the five that I talked about that are now in the emergency department waiting to get into a bed because they're occupied. So please get vaccinated. It's the best option for you, and it's the best option for our public.
Very good reminder. And Dr. Bob Underwood and Eddie Carrera, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's always a pleasure to speak to our hospital representatives, and you guys hang in there, and we support you, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you very much. There's our update from the hospital. Conditions still crowded. Lots of people.
Yeah, I will say, you know, in my other post, when I go up to the hospital, I mean, you're moving adults to pediatrics. I mean, people, it doesn't even make sense when you look at the form. It might say nephrology, and you go in, and you're like, this isn't a kidney case. Like, so there is a lot of real-time moving people around, and that's got to be just a chronic stressor on caregivers too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just finding space for everybody.
Yeah.
That needs it, and that's true. So we're thinking about those folks who, again, they keep getting up and going into work every day to deal with whatever the situation's going to be.
Right.
And I imagine a lot of these folks don't know what they're going to run into when they get there.
Right.
So there you go. Again, as we heard, jobs are open, positions are needed. At the hospital. So again, if you would like to apply or find out more information, you can call the hospital 505-609-2000. Nurses, nursing assistants, techs, radiology technicians, EMTs, respiratory therapists, environmental service aides, and housekeepers, all those positions are available at the hospital these days. And so that's a way to help, again, the community, because it is a community hospital, and we certainly appreciate all that they are doing. We talked a little bit about vaccines, and as Dr. Underwood said, that is one way that folks who aren't yet vaccinated can help maybe turn the tide and lower some of these numbers. There are vaccine clinics, again, continuing, and boosters now available to everybody. The state has kind of jumped ahead of the CDC and some of the other advisory groups to talk a little bit about making the booster now available for, I think, all adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vaccine is available for ages, of course, 5 to 11 as well. And here are the dates that we know of that are happening both here at San Juan College today, 12 plus only, at the HHPC, the Health and Human Performance Center, beginning at 9 a.m. until 10:30, so starting up at about a half an hour from now. And then tomorrow, there'll be another clinic here at the HHPC for younger kids.
Yeah, 5 to 11.
9 to 11:30.
Right.
And ages 5 to 11.
Right.
So for the younger kids to get their vaccine. And then, of course, we know that you can sign up for the booster on the website, the state website, vaccinenm.org. So I'm sure Matt Bieber will be talking about that in just a moment when he calls in. But we're going to go on to some other stuff this morning about the testing. Just briefly, continuing at Aztec Fred Cook Stadium on Wednesdays and Fridays, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Again, you can register at curative.com for the test. The McGee Park test site continuing, of course, and that has been going on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., the COVID-19 PCR test. Farmington Schools on 30th Street doing testing, 3401 East 30th Street. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays are doing those tests at the district office. And then the watch list, and I just wanted to kind of show the watch list, and I'm not going to spend the probably 45 minutes it would take me to read all the lists of places on the watch list, but I just wanted to scroll through for the video audience. There are several pages in just San Juan County of companies and government facilities and schools that are on the watch list now. These are places that have had more than three rapid responses, and so in some of the schools we have heard have been shut down because of a large number of COVID positive cases and things along that line. But this affects just about almost any type of business you can imagine, as we're looking at the list, from schools to government agencies to private businesses and schools throughout the county. It's not just Farmington Schools or Aztec Schools or Bloomfield Schools or Central Schools. They are all on that list, as you can see as we scroll through. And so they are continuing to have cases. And the entire watch list on the state environment website is about, I think, 7 pages long.
Yeah,
of companies throughout the state.
Folks, watch list means, I think.
Right.
So
these are places that have had 3 rapid responses.
Which means,
I think, as I recall, it was at least 3 positive
cases right.
in their store, in their school, in their whatever.
Right.
And that's what that means. So,
yeah.
Right. So that's why the list is so big.
Large.
Because it's here.
It's healthcare, schools, and some businesses is what we're looking at. On the screen for the radio audience
yes.
is what we're seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that brings us to our next guest.
Matt Bieber.
Matt Bieber is on the phone from the New Mexico Department of Health. And Matt, good morning. Thank you for calling in this morning.
Absolutely. Good to be with you.
Thank you. We just got through kind of showing everyone in our audiences and talking about the watch list, which, of course, is a different department, I realize, but it certainly goes along with the numbers of cases that we're seeing, COVID-positive cases from San Juan County. Unfortunately, we seem to be leading the state on the daily reports that we get from your office about the numbers of positive cases being reported, and it really has not really dropped down it that much. We're seeing a real spike throughout the state, aren't we?
We certainly are. Yeah, something like 1,700 cases yesterday, not a number we want to see ever, and certainly not as often as we've been seeing high numbers lately. It's troubling. And, you know, I think there are a couple explanations. I don't know that any of them add up to the entire explanation, but they each help paint a part of the picture. So I'm happy to go through what we think we know in as much detail as I can.
Yeah, please, if you can help explain it to us, I think we'd all like to try to get some explanation of what's going on. And it seems like these numbers are where we were back at the peak last winter, if they're not worse.
Yeah, there were numbers that were higher, but yes, they're certainly very high, and they're higher than, you know, we saw a month or two ago, and we thought we were heading in a more positive direction, and things seem to have reversed here. So a couple things might be going on. One is that waning immunity. So if we think about where New Mexico was in the vaccine distribution process, we led the nation in vaccine uptake and distribution early in the year. And what that means is that if the vaccines do wane in effectiveness over time, we're going to be one of the first states to notice it, right? Because our folks have been vaccinated for longer. And that is what the data seems to be suggesting. Something like 5.5 months after your Pfizer or Moderna series is complete, we are seeing data that suggests that folks become more susceptible to breakthrough cases at that point. The number is a little shorter. The time frame is a little shorter with Johnson & Johnson. And this is the reason that boosters were approved by the federal government. Lots of data suggesting that if the vaccines are waning in immunity a little bit, well, then it'll help to boost folks' immunity, get them back to a higher level of immunity protection. Now, the caveat there is that these vaccines are still extraordinarily effective at preventing the things we most want to prevent, which is hospitalizations and deaths. So it's possible to still get COVID after you've been vaccinated, but if you've been vaccinated, the chances of a serious outcome, a serious consequence, are extremely low. But in any event, I think the data does suggest that we're at that moment now where lots of folks are really eager, especially very vulnerable folks, older folks, folks with lots of underlying conditions, folks who live in congregate care settings like long-term care facilities, nursing homes, et cetera. You know, those folks got vaccinated first, and they're the most vulnerable. And so it makes sense that we're seeing more cases, especially in those contexts now. That's part of it. And then Delta is probably part of it too. Again, Delta is just a lot more transmissible than the previous variants we've seen. And then of course, waning compliance with public health practices, COVID safe practices. So, you know, when you go into a business and you see that the owner's not wearing a mask and the customers aren't wearing a mask, well, that's just an invitation for COVID spread. And I don't say that, you know, with any contempt or criticism or cynicism, and it's just a fact. You know, when we make those choices, then those are the outcomes we should expect. And so those three those three explanations, I think go most of the way probably to explaining where we are right now.
Very helpful. Thank you so much. And so let's ask sort of nuts and bolts details question. So if I got the Pfizer Moderna or if I got the Johnson & Johnson, does it matter which booster I receive, especially with Johnson & Johnson?
No, the federal government is agnostic about it. Basically, I think the message from them and then certainly the message from us is we don't really have enough data at this point to know, you know, what combination will be best for you individually or for folks in general. And that's why the federal government just allows what's called mixing and matching. So, you know, if for whatever reason you prefer Moderna or J&J or for Pfizer, you're welcome to do that. The only thing that changes is the timeline. So if you got J&J as your primary series, then you only have to wait 2 months for your booster. Whereas if you've got Moderna or Pfizer for your primaries, then you've got to wait 6 months for your boosters. But after that, it's your choice. And I suspect over time, you know, the next 6 months or a year, we'll see data comparing the effectiveness of mixing versus staying with the same brand. And then we'll be able to offer that information to folks, and they can make an even more informed choice at that time.
Got it. And Matt, we learned, I think, recently that the state was kind of jumping ahead of some of the federal guidelines on boosters by opening up the opportunity to get a booster to all adults. And I guess that maybe follows what you said about our waning effectiveness from the vaccine, since a lot in Mexicans were vaccinated so soon into the availability. Was that part of the reasoning behind that decision?
Yeah, so I want to be really clear. What we view what we did as in line with CDC guidance, and here's why. The CDC offered a series of guidelines about who could get boosters, and one of their criteria was if you're 18 and over and you live or work in a high-risk setting. Well, we looked at the data in our state, as, by the way, now something like 8 or 9 other states have done, and we concluded that New Mexico is a high-risk setting. You know, it's not just an individual business here or there or a church or whatever. It's the state. Given the level of community transmission we have, given that nearly every county is in the red, save one, given the number of cases, the number of deaths, and the overwhelmed hospital system we have, this is a high-risk setting as a state. And therefore, we view everyone as eligible under the CDC guidance. I will also say we're getting hints from the federal government that they're likely to take the same step soon. I can't speak for them, of course, but I think we're likely to see that step soon. California did it, Colorado, a bunch of other big states.
Right, and I think you're right that will be coming any day now. We're expecting some of that other guidance from the CDC, but it's a good point that you make about, you know, looking at conditions on the ground here in New Mexico, especially San Juan County, when you can see these high numbers of cases, the high positivity rates, the high cases per 100,000 residents, and I can see that you would consider this a high risk situation. So, thank you for explaining that to us.
Sure. Could elaborate on that just a little bit. I mean, I'm in these numbers every day, talking about it all day long, and still every time we do a press conference and Dr. Scrace shows the slide of the available ICU beds in our state, and on any given day it's like 10 maybe, and then he makes the point that's like, if you have a heart attack today, we are not in a position to guarantee you a bed. We don't know for sure that there'll be a place in a hospital for you. When I think about that in relation to the people I love, my daughter, my wife, you know, that certainly feels like a high risk state to be in. So, you know, this isn't just a matter of rhetoric or wordplay for us. This is pretty serious business.
Very serious. And so it's super helpful to have an insider expert perspective on that. And Matt Bieber, thank you as always for coming on. We appreciate every time you call and give us an update. So thanks so much.
Absolutely. Happy to do it anytime. Appreciate your coverage.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Matt Bieber from the New Mexico Department of Health, our guest here on KSJE, and that will wrap up our program this week.
That was a heavy-hitting program.
No kidding, like, right?
Wow.
Great guests and great information, which is why we do this every other week. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with another COVID-19 local information program. But next Friday, we're going back to a solution from the street.
That's right.
So another new solution. From another new street.
From another new street. Lots of streets in town.
There are many streets to cover. And so we'll be with you. Mental health is our focus next week, as a matter of fact.
Which is good. We've actually focused on mental health last solutions.
That's true.
Which is important.
It really is. Important. There's a lot of need and a lot of need for solutions. So we're glad to cover as many as we can. So until then, everybody, though, stay well and stay safe. We will see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving and be well, everyone. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.